from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At 11:02 this morning, Senator John Kerry called President George W. Bush to concede the election. His call put a quiet end to a bitter and divisive race that, in the wee hours today, looked as if it might go on for weeks. Ohio, not Florida, was the big state in contention this time, but Ohio was only a piece of the dramatic red and blue puzzle that saw George Bush reelected after a harrowing night of close tallies and close calls in key swing states. Republicans have now widened their majority on Capitol Hill, and President Bush has another 4 years, this time with the delicious legitimacy of winning an absolute majority and the popular vote. Tonight on Point, the re-election of George W. Bush and how the GOP held on to the White House. We begin tonight with a few words from the two contenders as the presidential race came to an end today. Here is Senator John Kerry delivering his concession speech to supporters this afternoon in Boston's historic Faneuil Hall.
I did my best to express my vision and my hopes for America. We worked hard and we fought hard, and I wish that things had turned out a little differently. But in an American election, there are no losers, because whether or not our candidates are successful, the next morning we all wake up as Americans. And that is the greatest privilege and the most remarkable good fortune that can come to us on earth. With that gift also comes obligation. We are required now to work together for the good of our country. In the days ahead, we must find common cause. We must join in common effort, without remorse or recrimination, without anger or rancor. America is in need of unity and longing for a larger measure of compassion. I hope President Bush will advance those values in the coming years. I pledge to do my part to try to bridge the partisan divide. I know this is a difficult time for my supporters, but I ask them, all of you, to join me in doing that. Now more than ever, with our soldiers in harm's way, we must stand together and succeed in Iraq and win the war on terror. I will also do everything in my power to ensure that my party, a proud Democratic Party, stands true to our best hopes and ideals. I believe that what we started in this campaign will not end here. And I know our fight goes on to put America back to work and to make our economy a great engine of job growth. Our fight goes on to make affordable health care an accessible right for all Americans, not a privilege. Our fight goes on to protect the environment, to achieve equality, to push the frontiers of science and discovery, and to restore America's reputation in the world. I believe that all of this will happen, and sooner than we may think, because we're America, and America always moves forward.
Senator John Kerry delivering his concession speech to supporters earlier today in Boston. Soon after, at the Ronald Reagan Building in Washington, D.C., George W. Bush delivered his victory speech. Here is an excerpt.
I'm proud to lead such an amazing country, and I'm proud to lead it forward. Because we have done the hard work, we are entering a season of hope. We will continue our economic progress. We will reform our outdated tax code. We will strengthen the Social Security for the next generation. We will make public schools all they can be. And we will uphold our deepest values of family and faith. We will help the emerging democracies of Iraq and Afghanistan. So they can so they can grow in strength and defend their freedom. And then our servicemen and women will come home with the honor they have earned. With good allies at our side, we will fight this war on terror with every resource of our national power so our children can live in freedom and in peace. Reaching these goals will require the broad support of Americans. So today I want to speak to every person who voted for my opponent. To make this nation stronger and better, I will need your support, and I will work to earn it. I will do all I can do to deserve your trust. A new term is a new opportunity to reach out to the whole nation. We have one country, one Constitution, and one future that binds us. And when we come together and work together, there is no limit to the greatness of America.
President George Bush, delivering his victory speech this afternoon in Washington. We are talking tonight about the re-election of George W. Bush and how it came to be. After all the numbers and projections, when did it hit you that President Bush had victory in his hands? What was the key to the success of the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign? Did John Kerry lose this race, or did George Bush win it? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be talking with a big lineup of observers and Republicans tonight. I'm joined right now in the studio in Boston by Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, here we are. The exit polls had people racing all over the map yesterday. The evening's actual vote had people in both camps alternately, you know, weeping and cheering. But in the end, it's George W. Bush with the four more years he asked for, he has got. How do you read what transpired here yesterday, Jack?
Well, I think that Karl Rove really put his finger on it. He said Bush won because Americans recognized that he was, quote, a consequential leader. And that's objectively true. He is a consequential leader in domestic affairs with his tax program, with his education program, with his prescription drugs. He has acted and made real changes. In foreign affairs, it's clear in Iraq he is on his own, that is to say, in a war that he wasn't forced into, he has acted again. He has been a man of consequence. And that seems to draw to him a large element of admiration from his voters. For example, 59% of his voters said they voted for him mostly for him, not against the other guy, whereas with Kerry, 70% of his voters voted for him because of his opponent. In other words, there was a positive charge in Bush for his voters, and I think it's all around this idea of leader. And, you know, for decades we used to hear it about Barry Goldwater. You know where he stands. And again, people have said, you know, on issues, it doesn't so much matter with a leader so long as people get the sense of him as consistent. Tip O'Neill, for example, left office with a 66% approval rating. The reason? He was a liberal from dawn to dusk, and people recognized that as they didn't agree with it, but they recognized that as a consistency. Bush has that.
That image and that fact, as you say, of a man who has led in a direction.
It is a fact. Consequential leader.
And coming right in off of that with this majority and the 3.5 million vote lead on John Kerry at the end of the day, not all the votes in yet, and still provisional ballots and this and that, but no one is disputing at the level of the general vote. Bush has got it.
He has got it. And, you know, for a couple of years now, we've been talking about Karl Rove's strategy, which was to get the 4 million evangelical votes that he felt Bush didn't get in 2000 to get them into the electorate. Well, what did Bush win by? 3.5 million. There it is.
Boom.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
But, you know, when you look at this, I mean, there was a tremendous risk in nominating a northern liberal for this office. McGovern, Mondale, Dukakis all had one thing in common. They're from the north, and they lost. Carter and Clinton had one thing in common. They're from the south, and they won. And Kerry, early in the campaign, when in the primaries, when John Edwards said, you know, a northerner can't win, he said, we can win without the South. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't, because the South is not just the South. It's morals. It's values. It's Southern Ohio.
It's a state of mind.
It's a state of mind, as well as about 66% of the electoral vote in the old Confederacy and in the border states. To start out, to people kept talking about the Southern lock on the presidency. It worked. This was the Southern lock.
And when you look at that national electoral map and the red just sweeping right across that lower tier and right up through the center of the country, it is a big C indeed.
And yet, Bush's victory wasn't limited to the South. What strikes me about it was how broad, given everything, it was. I mean, for example, he got 45% of urban voters. He carried the suburban vote. He carried strongly the rural vote. He even got 25% of gay and lesbian voters. He got about that of voters who wanted abortion legal. But he has the opposite positions. But again, I think there's that leader idea. People trusted him. The most important quality for his voters was trust, honesty, trust. 70% of them liked that about him. For Kerry, that was only 29%. And in a sort of battle between faith and reason, 91% of Kerry's voters said the thing they liked best about him was his intelligence. 91% of Bush's voters said the thing they liked best about him was his religious faith.
And they both really rode those horses, and we see how the horse is placed. Jack, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation from College Station, Texas, George Edwards. He's professor of political science and chair in presidential studies at the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University. Good evening and welcome, George Edwards. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
How are you interpreting this outcome, George Edwards? How did Bush do it?
Well, I think I agree with the comments that have just been made, which I thought were quite insightful. I think the core strategy for the Bush campaign was to turn the election from a referenda on the challenger to a referenda on the incumbent. From the incumbent to a referenda on the challenger. And so they focused on the character of John Kerry, and they defined their opponent back in March and April, after Kerry had gotten the nomination sewed up and was temporarily a little short on funds. And so the Bush campaign immediately went to the field, spent tens of millions of dollars defining Kerry in the terms of the Bush's greatest relative advantage, which was exactly as just been said, in the strength of character and the strength of leadership. And they, of course, portrayed Kerry on the dimension of weakness. They said he's a weak leader. He's irresolute. He's not up to the job of handling the war on terrorism. And that was very damaging. And the term flip-flopper became a very common term that Americans use to describe John Kerry. That doesn't mean it's fair. It doesn't mean it's accurate. But it means that the Bush campaign was very effective at this. And they then tied that strength of character to the they tried to define the playing field with a fair amount of success, I think, and said, let's have this campaign on our terms and on our issues. And their issue, of course, was terrorism. And so they made that the most salient issue, and they made Kerry have to respond on that issue. And if one thinks back to the Republican convention, it was overwhelmingly focused on terrorism. And while Iraq was not an asset to the president, it was a marginal liability, to the extent that he could tie Iraq to terrorism and say Iraq is simply the latest chapter in the war on terrorism, that was greatly to his advantage.
And at the end of the day, 3.5 million on the plus side in the Bush column in the popular vote. Any surprise in that to you, George Edwards?
No, actually, my own prediction was that he would get 51% of the vote, and indeed that's what he got.
Right on
what
the money.
I was a little surprised about is that he did better in almost every state than he did last time.
George Edwards, in College Station, Texas, please stand by. Jack Beatty right here. We're talking tonight about what just happened in American politics, the reelection of George W. Bush. You can join the conversation. When did it hit you that George Bush had been reelected? What was the key to the success of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about the re-election of George W. Bush and how the GOP held on tight to the White House in this big campaign year. You can join the conversation tonight. Did John Kerry lose this race, or did George Bush just go out and win it? And what do you think of that ocean of red on the electoral map? Was it inevitable? And this, what have you learned from the way this presidential vote turned out? What are the lessons here for Democrats? What's the lesson for Republicans? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joined tonight from College Station, Texas, by George Edwards. He's professor of political science and chair in presidential studies at the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University. He's editor of Presidential Studies Quarterly. We're joined right now from College Park, Maryland, by Karen Kaufman. She's assistant professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. Karen Kaufman, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
You have been digging into the numbers behind the numbers, and what can you tell us? What's the profile that emerges here? What are you mining out of those numbers, Karen?
I see a couple of patterns that I think are particularly interesting and telling about this race. One is that older voters, who in general are sort of the mainstay of the Democratic Party and for a long time were really the most reliable Democratic voters, were 7 percentage points more likely to support Bush this time around than they were in 2000. I think we see another interesting statistic, which is Latino voters, who in general go about 60-30 Democrat-Republican, and last time Bush ran, Bush got about 35% of the vote, and this time he got 44% of the vote. I think what we're seeing in this election, and it's interesting that Professor Edwards was talking about what Bush did well, I think what you're also seeing what Kerry did poorly, and that's if you think about the base of the Democratic Party, you know, where do those core votes come from? They come from African-American voters. They come from Latino voters. They come from women. They come from older voters. And what links those constituencies together typically is their support for, you know, social welfare programs and social safety net. And that's what energizes that base, and that's what keeps them with the Democrats. Kerry, I think, was lured into a campaign and decided that he was going to fight this on Bush's turf, thinking somewhat naively that since he was a veteran and a war hero and George Bush had little experience, you know, at war, that he would automatically have bona fides on these issues and be able to compete with the Republican Party on questions of terrorism and the Iraq War. And if you think back to the Democratic Convention, as I was sitting in my house watching it, I thought to myself, this is a four-day Vietnam War retrospective. I mean, where was the red meat for black voters? Where was the red meat for Latino voters? What were they offering to older voters? What were they offering to women? I mean, they tended to stay away from anything that looked like a wedge issue. They talked about the war, the war, the war, the war. And frankly, those were not exciting issues for the people that they desperately needed to come out and extraordinarily good numbers, and they lost women, and they lost people of color, and they lost older voters, and I think in large part it was because of the strategy of the Kerry campaign.
George Edwards, I wonder what you make of that. Did John Kerry lose those voters by not going harder on social programs and benefits, or did he lose them because George Bush pulled them away with his strong talk of national security?
Well, I think there's some of both, but I think Bush certainly had an advantage there and did pull them away. But he also had something else going on, because in any given election, there's a buffet of issues, if you will, and only some could be salient to any given voter. And we have an overlay here of what we might call the moral issues, the morality issues. And one of the appeals of the Bush campaign, for example, to Hispanics was on conservative social issues. And they did that very explicitly. They did that very knowingly. And apparently with a fair degree of success. And that's a real problem for the Democratic Party, because the Republicans have been able to not only energize their base with these kinds of issues, abortion, gay marriage, that sort of thing, but in addition, they're able to eat in to the Democratic base.
George Edwards, Karen Kaufman, Jack Beatty, stand by. I want to plunge right into the middle of that big red ocean in the middle of America right now, in Lincoln, Nebraska. We are joined from Lincoln by Governor Mike Johanns, Governor of Nebraska, Republican Governor of Nebraska. Governor, welcome. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to be with you tonight.
We're looking tonight at how Bush and Cheney did it, how the Republicans did it, how they held on to the White House so effectively. What's your interpretation?
Well, on the issues, Bush got the campaign I believe he wanted, and that is it was a campaign that devoted a tremendous amount of time to Iraq, national security, protection of the country. Who could do a better job? And on any polling I ever saw, people believe that Bush was the best suited to do that. So from an issue standpoint, I agree. I think dating back to the Democrat convention, this was played on Bush's side of the court, and it never really moved off of that. And that was the campaign I think Bush hoped for, and that's the campaign he ended up with. I also do believe that at least here in this part of the country, beyond Nebraska, the Midwest, Western states, the moral issues are very, very significant. They're significant not only to the white voter, but they're also very significant to the Latino voter. Family, faith, abortion, those are big issues out here.
Governor, let me ask you, we're looking at the numbers today, and of course, almost all precincts reporting from around the country, 59 million plus votes for George Bush, 55.45 for John Kerry. Electoral vote count, 279 for Bush, 252 for Kerry. And you know what the exit polls looked like early yesterday. Were there moments yesterday or even last night where you were feeling white-knuckled, where you personally thought Kerry might have it?
You know, we kept hearing about the exit polls, but then when I saw the exact numbers, they were so completely out of whack. And the exit polls were not successful 4 years ago. There was this big controversy mm-hmm. about them not being reliable. So even though it was concerning, there was a lot of reason to believe that those exit polls were not going to hold up. And even in the you know, and I started looking down through the states where Kerry was doing well. Those were states where I think everyone anticipated he would do well. Mm-hmm. And it was still fairly close in Florida and Ohio, which I always believed were going to be the key battleground states. I think most people did.
And what do you make of this final outcome? How would you describe it? How definitive a victory? And what does it say about George Bush's mandate to lead now, Governor?
Well, Bush got the victory that he hoped and prayed for 4 years ago. The electoral vote, fairly close, but popular vote, he won that. He did not win that with Vice President Gore. So Bush can justifiably claim mandate here. I don't know if he will, but very clear. And then the story that is now starting to be written, and it will be written page after page in the months ahead, is the House in the Senate. It looks like it's going to be 55 Republicans in the United States Senate. The House seats, there's a couple, I think, still up in the air, but they expanded their majority some. So, and then you look at the governor's races. Republican governors did very well. So it pretty well was a clean sweep from one side of the ballot to the other. And then you know, that key race in South Dakota where Tom Daschle was defeated, and in the end, somewhat close, but they were saying that would be decided by under 500 votes. It wasn't. It was a clearer victory than that. So I don't know what more Bush could have hoped for last night. He pretty well got it all.
And how do you interpret the Democrats' problem here, Governor? You're quoted in the New York Times today in Nick Kristof's column talking about the difficulty of the Democratic Party elite in talking to that big middle of America. What do you think's going on there?
Oh, I think that big middle America gets up in the morning, they go to work, they oftentimes, you know, are trying to figure out how to pay the bills. Bill Owens, a friend of mine, the governor of Colorado, talked about attending a sports game with one of his children, listening to the couple in front of him talking about budgeting and how they were getting ready for school and they would buy the shoes and the jeans this paycheck, but maybe they'd have to wait then until the next paycheck. Well, let me tell you, to that couple, the whole effort by the president to get them some form of tax relief was a big dang deal. And I think the Kerry people kept minimizing that and kept saying, well, you know, the rich people got that. No, wait a second. I have a son and a daughter-in-law that got that, and it helped them a lot. Then I think it's just hard to relate to, you know, Hollywood is interesting to watch. They make great movies, and they sing songs that we all enjoy. But quite honestly, out here, I'm not sure people relate to that. It may be neat to watch, but I saw a lot of Hollywood on the Kerry side of the race, and I'm not sure that made any difference whatsoever, and it looked a little elitist.
But traditionally, you know, Governor, the Democrats were seen as the party that stood up for that little guy. Republicans as the party of wealth. Has that flip-flopped at this point?
Well, you know, I think if you look at some of the polling, it says that Kerry still won amongst people who earn $50,000 or less, but they are very, very close to losing the heart and soul of their party. Because they have to figure out a way to relate to people, and I just think they're dangerously close to running into a situation here where the average guy doesn't relate to the Democrat Party anymore.
Governor, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Glad to do it. Have a good evening.
You too. Governor Mike Johanns, Republican governor of Nebraska, joining us there from Lincoln, Nebraska. Jack, there's a Republican leader right in the middle of that Red Sea, and you hear his interpretation. He just feels closer to the masses, dare I say it?
Yes, and yet by wealth and circumstance, George Bush is the American aristocracy, distant relative of the Queen of Queen Elizabeth. And Kerry, of course, is himself has blue blood, but he didn't have that kind of a childhood, really. He was kind of on the outside. Nevertheless,
but this is more than personal stories, isn't it?
It's party positioning. Yes, it is party positioning. Just to go back to one of the points that Professor Kaufman was making, to me, what really struck me about this Kerry campaign, it's right really pretty much on what she's been talking about, how they weren't speaking to the base. It was only when Bob Schieffer raised the issue of the minimum wage that I heard from John Kerry's lips he wanted to raise the minimum wage $7 to $7 an hour, meaning that people earning it were going to get a $4,000 raise. Mm. Now, if you want to go after that vote, why wouldn't that be the very first thing in every speech out of your mouth? If you are earning the minimum wage or even near it, I'm going to give you $4,000 more a year. It got lost. I mean, and that's just emblematic of them of the Democrats losing their instinct for the class issue, for people who are they profess to and I believe still represent, but they've lost their feel for it. They're afraid that if they go after it, they're going to lose their professional voters, their upper income voters, their suburban voters, and they're just backing off.
Listeners, what do you think? What do you make tonight of the big election result that we're all looking at today? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Mitch is calling from Boston. Hi, Mitch. You're on the air.
Hi. It's good to be on the show.
It's great to have you, Mitch. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm really getting tired of all this talk about unity and healing. It's really, I really part company. I'm certainly a liberal, and I stand with my liberals and being angry today and depressed. But I part company on analysis. I really think, in the words that everybody uses, if they want to fight a culture war, I say let's fight a culture war. Let's bring it on. Let's meet the opponents on the cultural issues. And I kind of agree with Christopher Hitchens that out of disunity and conflict, you get change and progress rather than bland consensus.
Mitch, let me ask you, we've only had this talk of unity and healing for about a minute and a half in the great scheme of things. We've had months and months and months of division. But even today's talk in the concession speech and in Bush's speech is too much for you. You want to go at it, hammer and tongs.
Well, sure, because, we need to deal with these issues. We need to argue with evangelicals and simply appeal to reason and say, a Bible written by men many years ago, and let's look at, is a fetus a person? Let's bring these issues in the open.
But didn't we just have a year and more long campaign exactly going at this conflict,
I don't believe so. I believe Alan Wolf would have us think so. And I really disagree with Alan Wolf's analysis. I really, if what you're saying, certainly there's been great division. I guess the argument is that a good or a bad thing? I'm saying that's positive. I'm saying let's have more of it. Because after all, there is a war, and if there's a culture war, let's fight the war.
But if we just had a culture, if it's been going on, and we just had an election, haven't you? And you're a liberal, haven't you just lost, Mitch?
Yeah, but you know, when you're defeated, you can fight another. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a complaint, you know. So I mean, it's.
You're ready to stand up, get the pitchfork, and head right back into the fray.
Well, sure. You know, that's what Americans experiment. America, you know, it's very young democracy, and it's very precious, and it's also very fragile. It's all three of those things.
No, I hear you loud and clear, and I'm sure a lot of people feel just that way tonight. A 51-48 victory is indeed a victory, but there's 48 standing there saying, hey, wait a minute, what about our view? Mitch, thanks very much for your call. George Edwards, how do you see this clear and deep division playing out as we go forward? Mitch is ready to plunge right into the culture war, and clearly so are many on the Republican side. Where do you see that going?
Yeah, well, I think you have to watch what you wish for. For example, the country in general is moving toward more tolerant positions towards gays, which I happen to think is a very good thing.
Even with the 11 referenda
yesterday? Yes, but on the other hand, and that's exactly the point I'm going to make, however, when you push it too far or too fast, what happens is that you have laws which are a big setback, and now we've formalized. We've taken from, you know, informal views, if you will. We've now formalized laws which gays don't want. So you have to watch what you wish for, and I think you have to do this smart. And I'm not sure that going full tilt in the cultural war all the time is the smartest way to achieve your goals.
Karen Kaufman, let me ask you about that very issue, the gay issue. Of course, Massachusetts legalized gay marriage. And we had an uproar around the country, and here we are a few months later. John Kerry's lost. If he had 100,000 some more votes in Ohio, he'd be president tonight. Do you think the gay issue cost the Democratic contender the election?
I wouldn't say necessarily that it was the gay issue alone, but I think that one of the things the Democrats have done, and certainly they did this during the period of, you know, when Bill Clinton came to office, was this idea if we could move to the center on economic issues, if we could be the party of fiscal responsibility, if we could move away from being tax and spend liberals, then we are going to be more electable. But what happened as a result of that is the one left distinguishing feature between the parties, now that the Republicans and the Democrats were both trying to out fiscally, be responsive to one another, is that these cultural issues became the new dynamic, the new difference between the parties. And frankly, if the Democrats want to regain their, you know, majority status, and there is to focus on the questions of inequality, to be looking at things like minimum wage legislation and things that help working families. I mean, I think that John Kerry decided to, you know, he said, bring it on. I'll fight you in your backyard on the question of terrorism in Iraq. And he left the classic Democratic issues that are really winning issues for the Democrats at home.
And yet, what a big issue security was.
I don't know. He lost it because he didn't talk to the base of the party, and it's not just about culturalism. The base of the party are people who think that the government has a responsibility to help them have a better life.
Karen Kaufman, George Edwards, Jack Beatty, stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about what just happened in American politics, the re-election of George W. Bush. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the re-election of George W. Bush and how the GOP held on tight to the White House. You can join our conversation. What have you learned from the way this presidential vote turned out? What's the lesson for Democrats? What's the lesson for Republicans? And what does this vote tell you about American politics and American priorities? Now we're at 1-800-423-8255. We'll be joined in a few minutes by former CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite, joined right now from College Station, Texas, by George Edwards at Texas A&M University, by Karen Kaufman from the University of Maryland. Our own Jack Beatty is with us as well, and Patrick is calling from Edenton, North Carolina. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
How are you?
Great, thanks. What's on your mind, Patrick?
Well, I'm interested in the comments about the Democrats not connecting with mainstream America, and the pundits saying that the Democrats are in it. It's almost a desperate attempt to do that before their party implodes and so forth, and also this term cultural war. I think mainstream America has shifted. I think that's the question that is begged and needs to be answered. Traditional beliefs of what mainstream America are, I think, have changed. We had in this election, I believe, that Karl Rove's comments before the election were that his evangelicals were going to come out and win this election for George Bush.
Yeah.
We have a situation where we're using this term cultural war. I'd go so far as think even more extreme and say it's the beginning of a civil war. When people choose to vote against their own practical best interests, I think it's a huge problem. Otherwise, you have to assume that mainstream America is very comfortable and has grown into a sense of complacency where education is very simple and basic. We're not able to think critically, and we're not able to override our emotions with reason.
Patrick, let me ask you, though. We see Karl Rove aiming for that base, but deciding that in aiming for the base, he could also get the swing vote. We read Ralph Reed today, who organized the Bush-Cheney campaign in the Southeast, where you are, saying that Bush's big performance shows that there's not a trade-off between pursuing the conservative base and pursuing swing voters. That is, as you suggest, the center of gravity has shifted. You can have them both.
Well, it would appear to be that way. And I think the Democrats launched a tremendous campaign. You know, when you have a presidential candidate that by all pundits won three debates, made incredible arguments, appealed to what we thought were wide masses.
You're saying Kerry in that case.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying Kerry. Mm-hmm. And still loses the popular vote, and still loses the swing states. I think that we have to look at the fact that the center has changed. It's shifted, which is an alarming thought.
Patrick, we've got it, and let us pick it up. Jack Beattie, how about it? That shifting center that the Republicans can capture even when they're appealing to their hard right base.
Yes, to me, the most remarkable finding in the statistics this morning was that the number one issue for more Americans picked morality as the
moral
main,
values
mm-hmm. as the main issue than even terrorism. Mm-hmm. And when you looked at the data, you saw people who picked terrorism and morality, 70-80% Bush. People who picked the economy and health care, 70-80% Kerry. And the Democrats, you know, what's the answer? How do they fight on that terrain? Do they do it by celebrating their secularism, or do they profess secularism, as one of our callers suggests, a kind of culture war? Or is it possible that they can find a moral language for the things they believe in? That, for example, if you work a full-time job in America, you should not be beneath the poverty line, and yet millions are. That to be a working poor person in America, it undermines the work ethic, a moral. The point is, there's a way of talking about these things that's highly moral and appeals to what even evangelical people profess, which is the essence of Christianity and certainly of Judaism, that we're here to improve the world and especially to look after our fellows, all of us, together. And Kerry didn't do that.
Tikkun, Okwa is calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Okwa. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah.
I happen to believe that, things like health care, peace, economic justice, opportunity, social equality for, you know, regardless of race, religion, or even gay rights, those are moral values. And, you know, whether you call it secular humanism or whatever you call it, there may not even be a name for it yet. Those things matter. They matter to me personally. And, you know, I wish John Kerry could have done a better job of articulating those things as, you know, a counterpoint to what the religious right did.
So that sounds like a second to Jack Beattie's observation right here. And thanks very much for your call, Okwa. George Edwards, I want to ask you on the issue of turnout. There was so much talk in advance of this election about getting out the vote, about how well organized everybody was, and the assumption that turnout would really work in the Democrats' favor. As it happens, as I see the numbers, where there was big turnout, the new turnout was also split. Republicans took a big share of that. How do you interpret what went on there?
Well, I think that I think you're right to begin with, and second, I think the Republicans were able to energize a part of the formerly unpoliticized, and I mean that's what the Karl Rove's focus on the religious right was all about. We need to politicize their values and get them to turn out because they have been low turnout, and so the Republicans were very successful. I don't think it's that the mainstream has shifted. I think that more people have been politicized, and you've taken formerly non-political values or seemingly non-political values and given them a political thrust. And indeed, I think that Jack is absolutely right that the Democrats have to respond to that, and they have to deal with this issue of religiosity in the broad sense and not seem to be an enemy of it. And I should add, I think some perspective is very important here. If 1.5% of the vote had switched from Bush to Kerry, it had been a tie.
Or 100,000 in some in Ohio.
So we're talking about you know, a relatively modest percentage of the public.
And yet it is winner-take-all. Karen Coffin, we've just got half a minute left. What do you think the Republicans, the Democrats, are going to take away from this race?
Well, I think that they're taking away the wrong message if they think the idea is that now the Democrats need to pander to religious people. The majority of the country sits somewhere in the middle on these so-called moral issues. They're willing to compromise. They're not absolutist. They're not necessarily evangelical, fundamentalist in their beliefs. And I think the Republican Party may do very well by appealing to religious people. I think the Democrats may need to be able to speak to people, but they also need to be able to return to their roots. The Democrats had a lack of clarity in this case, and I think that's in large part that it's not a Kerry's fault. The Democratic Party needs to regroup and reconvict to what it is that the Democratic Party stands for, and I think they'll be able to run more effective campaigns.
Well, we're going to be talking tomorrow night more about the Democratic Party, but tonight it is a big, big day of victory for the Republicans in the House, in the Senate, and in that White House. Karen Coffin at the University of Maryland, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
And George Edwards, chair in presidential studies at the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M University, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jack, thanks to you for being with us as well. It's been a long day. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, a conversation with Walter Cronkite. This is On Point. For generations of Americans, the voice of longtime CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite defined key moments in the nation's history, the Kennedy assassination, the Vietnam War, the first walk on the moon, Watergate. In his retirement, Walter Cronkite remains an icon, but he's become an outspoken citizen as well. I spoke today with Mr. Cronkite and asked for his reflections on what happened in yesterday's vote and what it means for the country.
We've got a highly divided society in the United States. Many of the things that the present administration and the continuing administration have done have excited a large part of the population that seems to believe that another course would have been better to pursue. I think that all we can look forward to now and should look forward to now, I thought Senator Kerry spoke rather well on it today, and the president did too, as a matter of fact, that we must come together now for the good of America, and this is going to take some compromises on, I would hope, both sides, through the Congress and through the administration in the White House, that will bring the people together again and perhaps even strengthen our democracy rather than tear it apart, as the results would seem to indicate.
But is there not also in these numbers an endorsement for President Bush's policies? And if there is, what is it in the way he's approaching the world that's appealing to millions of Americans?
A lot of this had to do with the religious right, the feeling that Christian prerogatives are important in the operation of our democracy. I think there are many who would take issue with that, as we know. That has something to do with the way the vote was split.
Walter Cronkite, you've seen times of division before. You saw the nation divided over Richard Nixon and Vietnam. Now there's a lot of talk again. You've noted it yourself tonight about the polarized electorate. Is it different this time, or is this just another period of polarization?
I think that the huge turnout this year was incited by the very strong feeling that the anti-Bush forces. This was incited by, in a great degree, the Iraqi war. And, of course, alongside that, the economy. These were touching right at the heart, the solar plexus of the population, as we saw in the intensity of the anti-Bush forces, the pro-Kerry forces.
Do you think the country is more divided now than it was at times of polarization during the Cold War or the Vietnam War, or not?
No, I don't think we're more polarized, but perhaps we're more intensely polarized. The anti-Vietnam people were pretty insistent on their positions, as well as the anti-Iraq people are today. But it didn't become as much of an issue to the people as Vietnam did. The intensity among many people was as great as in the case of the Iraq thing, but it did not seem to affect as large a percentage of the population.
Walter Cronkite, you've seen a lot of American history. As we talk tonight and President Bush prepares for a second term, I wish you'd just share with us your basic hopes and fears for the country at this juncture.
I don't think I'm qualified to tap in right now what the country's hopes and fears are in the Iraq war. The intensity and fear is that we're perhaps doomed to stay there for a generation or so. We do not see a way out of that terrible situation in which we are losing our young people at a steady rate, and it's costing us so much money that we won't be able to afford many of the necessities here at home. This is one of the reasons for the intensity. But now this is just getting back again and reciting the litany of faults with the administration's programs that Senator Kerry constantly repeated. It is time now for us to get together. We really must, we really have to come together in the hope and the belief that the legislators of our nation will work together with the leadership on the other side so that we can agree upon perhaps a middle road that would be more satisfactory to all the people.
I guess finally, Mr. Cronkite, just your personal hopes and fears tonight at the end of this bitter election season about the direction of American democracy. How are you feeling about it?
I am nonpartisan. I do not belong to a party. I'm not party-oriented, but I am liberal. And I must say that I am concerned about much of the administration's program. But I am hopeful that they are open to compromises today that will put us back on a program that most of our people can support, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Christians or some other religion, whether they live in the southern states or in the northern states or the Grand Prairie areas. We've got to put all of this aside now. It is essential for the future of our country. For one thing, we have got to make new approaches to our former allies overseas so that, again, the rest of the world looks at the United States as a nation that they can feel comfortable in following, whose leadership they will accept in the future without our having to proclaim our superiority. I hope that that will be part of the new America of the second Bush administration.
Walter Cronkite, we're very grateful for your time. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
You're certainly welcome, Wright.
Veteran CBS Evening News anchorman Walter Cronkite speaking earlier today from New York. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.